This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. As floodwaters recede, there's a good chance people will be seeking contractors for repair work. In the second half of the show today, we'll talk about why it's vital that homeowners make sure those contractors are licensed. If they're not, it could cost you thousands of dollars out of pocket and even jeopardize your personal safety. But first, five Central Florida cities north of the Orlando area, are launching a unique public-private partnership that is calling on the popular ride-sharing app Uber to meet the public transportation safety needs of residents by giving them discounts on rides taken between cities and to local SunRail stations. The cities of Altamont Springs, Lake Mary, Longwood, Maitland, and Sanford are teaming up with Uber for the project and setting aside cash to pay up to 25% of their riders' fare when they use the Uber app to hail a ride that ends in one of the five cities. The project didn't happen overnight. It started with a year-long pilot project in Altamont Springs before expanding to the neighboring cities. Here to tell us about that project and how it grew into this unique partnership with Uber in a total of five cities is Altamont Springs City Manager Frank Martz. Frank, welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Also joining us to talk about other projects Uber has in the works for Florida is Javi Corioso with Uber's Public Affairs Office. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. It's always a pleasure.
Have you ever taken an Uber to get around? Do you have questions about the ride-sharing app, and would you want your city to pitch in to help you pay for your ride? Give us a call and share your thoughts or ask any questions at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So first, Javi Corioso with Uber. For listeners in our area who may not have actually used an Uber, what is it? Who's driving and who's riding?
That's a great question, Julie. So Uber is an app that can be downloaded on your cell phone. You can also request a trip on the on your web browser online. And what it is it's a platform that connects drivers who are using their personal private vehicles to riders via the app who are looking for a ride. It's very easy to use. At the tap of a button, you can get a ride anywhere, and the Florida legislature just approved regulations for the industry. So now Uber is available throughout the state of Florida, including at facilities where in the past it may not have been available. I know the Fort Myers Airport was one of those facilities, but as of July 1st, we are now operating everywhere between Pensacola and Key West.
Oh, I remember that being a regulation. So at the Fort Myers Airport now, you're saying that Uber is allowed to drop people off and pick up?
Correct.
Okay. So how are these rides priced?
They're priced based on supply and demand, and then based on how far you're driving and what the time it takes. So the pricing varies by market. In Fort Myers, There's a minimum fare, which I believe is about $5 or around $5. And then depending on how far you're traveling or how long that trip may take, you're then charged based on the mileage and the time. One change that we have made in the past is that riders are now shown the fare of that trip up front. So there are no surprises. Once you request the trip and you input the address in which you are headed, you will receive a quote for that trip, and that will be the fare that you pay for that trip.
So I have the app. I open it up on my phone. I say, I'm here, and I want to go there. And then do the Uber drivers then respond and say, I'll take you there for $15 or whatever?
So it's done. The pricing is done by Uber. What will happen is once you request a ride, the system automatically pings the Uber driver partners that are around you. You will then see the car in the app approaching you. You have an estimated time of arrival for that vehicle. So usually it's no more than 10 minutes. The system automatically connects both the rider and the driver partner. And then once you get in the vehicle and you head into your destination, everything is tracked via GPS. So if you have any issues, you can share the trip with a family member or a friend. You can, in the app, contact not just the driver, but you can contact the company. If you had any issues, you leave something behind. Everything is tracked via our technology.
So how do you track these cars? I mean, if somebody signs up to be an Uber driver, do you have like a little GPS pinging thing that you send to a driver?
Correct. Everything's done via the phone. So the driver has the phone. They operate on the app. When they open up the app, they are on the Uber GPS system. They are driving around while they're waiting for a trip to come in. And once a rider requests that trip, the technology automatically connects the rider with the driver.
Okay. So the pricing is all, this is all cashless. This is all done on credit card and it's done through the app.
That's correct. You have a credit card on file. There's no need for cash. Once the trip concludes, you are sent an electronic receipt that details how far you traveled, how long it took. You will see a map that lays out the route in which you were taken, and then you have a your credit card is charged automatically.
Okay, and is it customary to tip an Uber driver or no?
So as of last month, you are allowed to tip via the app. That's up to the rider, quite frankly. If they feel that they got a great and outstanding service, they as of June, they do have that ability within the app to tip $2, $4, or any other amount they would like to tip, but it's not required.
Okay. Thank you for going over the basics with me, because I think there are some people in our area that have never, I know I've never been on used an Uber, so it's good to get a debrief on the basics. So now I want to turn to Frank Martz with Altamont Springs. More than a decade ago, Altamont Springs embarked on a project called FlexBus, but apparently that didn't pan out. What was FlexBus, and how did that then nudge Altamont Springs to consider something different?
Well, actually, FlexBus was very similar to Uber. We started in 1999. Trying to find a demand response alternative. It occurred to us that we all want convenience, and public transportation just was not. So we developed an algorithm, and we got an enormous amount of federal funding. But we had to turn the project over to our local bus company, and they frankly failed to bring it forward. And in that frustration with working with another public agency, we recognized that Uber had brought to the market that which we were trying to bring to the, you know, trying to bring to development, and we reached out to Uber and told them who we were and how different we are as local government. And over a few months, we got to know each other better and came to an agreement to do the first community-wide mobility pilot, and it was very successful.
So by doing the FlexBus, it kind of seemed like it was trying to almost reinvent something that already existed in a private setting. So then your pilot project then with Uber started in March of last year. How did things take off?
Very well. Throughout the first phase of the pilot, we saw about a 72% increase in usership. And what we heard really from our residents was not only were they happy with the fact that that their local government was trying to find a more convenient way for them, but they really appreciated the fact that we got outside of the standard model and worked with a private company to bring a lower cost alternative to them. So the feedback was very good, the data was very good, and the working partnership, I think one of the lessons learned that as a city we are sharing with other cities is that it is absolutely possible for local government and a global innovative private company to partner on something that works for people.
So before you partnered with Uber, though, you had a municipal mobility working group. Can you tell me a little bit about that group and what kind of issues it identified that needed to be addressed by a partnership like this?
What actually happened in reverse. We began our partnership with the pilot project with Uber. And then in the subsequent months, I went out to the other adjacent cities that had SunRail commuter rail stations in Seminole County and North Orange County and told them about our experience with Uber and talked to them about the mutual interests we had as cities. And from those discussions, we formed a municipal mobility working group to really look at the challenges that we're all going to face. How do we pay for commuter rail? Our region has no idea how that's going to occur. And people still needed to move around. And by bringing these five cities together, it really allowed us to start learning the fact that our residents didn't see boundaries. They didn't see jurisdictional lines. They just wanted to, you know, get a trip.
Yeah, somebody will live one place and work somewhere else. But the thing with the rail that you were talking about, that doesn't get people directly to where they're actually working. There's an issue of getting from the rail station or from the municipal type of transportation to the end destination.
That's one of the challenges with the Central Florida commuter rail. It is on an established rail line, which is not where anyone's city centers are. So, and commuter rail is not going to move. So using Uber, which has had some experience with first mile, last mile, blending that into our community-wide mobility pilot was something we did. We actually enhanced the discount to go to or from a commuter rail line by, you know, up to 25%, an extra 5%, just to try to encourage people to explore.
So the deal that you set up with Uber then, if somebody is going from one of these five cities to another one of the five cities, then it's a 20% discount?
Mm-hmm.
But then if they're going to one of these, the rail stations that you're talking about, the public transportation that goes from city to city, that is upped to a 25% discount.
Yeah, exactly. What we're recognizing here is that because commuter rail is in a place where really not a lot of people go, we felt like we needed to increase the incentive just to see. And that incentive is going to remain if you're inside of one of the cities and you go to one of those cities' Central stations, or you come from one. You get an enhanced discount. Frankly, we haven't seen a lot of draw in that, but we have seen a great amount of utility inside our cities using Uber. We expect in our phase two to see even more.
How long has this been going with the five cities now?
The five cities, Altamont Springs started in March of 2016. In July 1st of 2016, all five cities became a working group. And we've been working together for a year now. And we'll continue into phase two.
So Javi Corioso with Uber, we were talking. He mentioned really quickly. Frank mentioned a little bit about the first mile, last mile situation, and he mentioned that Uber has had a little bit of experience in dealing with working with that. Can you explain a little bit about what that is?
Absolutely. I think one of the reasons why we're so excited about working with Frank and these cities is the fact that we want to complement public transit, and oftentimes we're asked, you know, do you think that you have anything to do with the reduction in ridership of major transit agencies throughout the country? And for us, really, what we want to do is we want to explore ways, and this pilot program is a great example of that, in which we can complement public transit by offering residents a cheaper and affordable alternative to get to and from work. Our competition is individual car ownership. Our competition is not public transit. So I think that's why the results of this pilot have been very exciting for Uber, because what we've seen is that not just Altamont Springs, but some of the other cities and their residents are using Uber to leave their cars at home and use ride-sharing to get to and from public transit. And we're seeing that trend throughout the country where it may be cheaper for someone, instead of having to pay insurance, pay a car lease, or a monthly payment, it's to leave their car at home and rely on ride sharing to get around. And that's what these cities have shown. As a matter of fact, ridership on Uber, one of the stats that we pulled after the first phase of this pilot program was that Uber trips within these cities was up 75% during commuting hours. So during peak traffic times in the morning and afternoon, when people are trying to get to and from work, they're starting to change their driving and transportation habits and rely on transportation options to get around.
So when you're talking about going to and from that last mile to get to the train station, or I'm imagining something like San Francisco getting to a BART station so you don't have to sit in traffic, what would be the difference in cost? And I know it changes from city to city, but if you're only going to go 5 miles to get to the train station versus 30 miles into the city sitting for hours in high traffic, what kind of a difference are you looking at as far as what you're paying as a rider?
Yeah, that all varies by market. I can tell you that in the case of Miami, parking at the Metrorail stations, which is a train that runs north and south into downtown Miami. It's about $5, a little under $5 to park daily. So take myself for an example. I rely on Uber to get to and from the train station. It's actually cheaper when you take into account all the other factors, gasoline, all the other costs associated with driving to the train station. It is cheaper and more affordable for me to take an Uber to the Metro Rail station closest to my house to then pay the fare on the train, which I believe is $2.25 to get to downtown. In Washington, D.C., we saw this as well. When the metro system in Washington had to undergo some extensive renovations and construction a few months ago, we had a pooling together campaign. Now, this is a product that we still don't have in the Orlando market, but we do have a product called Uber Pool, which is a product in which the driver, through the technology, picks up various riders that are headed along the same route, and the riders then split the cost of that trip. So for a rider who may be heading from Arlington, Virginia, into our nation's capital, and an Uber X trip, which is our basic product, maybe $12, by sharing that ride with two or three additional riders along the route that that driver is taking, we can not only cut the fare of that price from $12 to half or a percentage of what the fare would have been, but we're also providing an incentive for individuals to, you know, to change their DNA and to explore additional options.
Mm-hmm. We are talking about Uber in Florida and a unique project that is connecting people with light rail in the center part of the state. A question that I've been curious about for a while, Javi, is some of the hurdles that you had to go through in order to get into Florida and get regulated to where Uber could operate more freely here. What are some of the things you had to meet? Things like statewide insurance, background check standards?
That's correct. There were three main aspects of the new statewide regulations that the legislature passed. The reason why it was so important for Tallahassee to preempt local governments and regulating ride sharing is that Florida is such a diverse state that having a patchwork of regulations by local governments just made it very, very difficult for drivers to operate. So, for example, we had different rules in Pinellas County, where St. Petersburg is located, to the rules in Hillsborough. And you have a lot of, not just visitors, but residents that constantly travel back and forth between the two jurisdictions, and the rules were vastly different. So the state of Florida decided to take matters into their own hands. They approved regulations for the industry. There were three main components to those regulations. The first were insurance requirements. Companies such as ours, when someone's in the vehicle, are required to carry a $1 million liability insurance policy. The second was screening requirements for drivers. There are a set of violations, felonies are an example. If you are on the National Sex Offender Registry, if you've had a DUI, if you had a reckless driving charge, there's a set of infractions that would disqualify you for being allowed to drive on the Uber platform. And then finally, consumer protection. And I mentioned some of those earlier in the interview. We are required to send each rider an electronic receipt of that trip. We are required to show them the fare of what that trip may cost or will cost to the rider. There's a few other consumer protection aspects of the regulations that were implemented as well. So what this meant for drivers is that drivers now had the regulatory certainty that they could drive throughout the state. And for riders, what it meant is that they can now have access to an Uber or another ride-sharing platform wherever they may be located, because there were still, up until early this year, local governments that were passing regulations that were designed to keep this technology out of the market.
Mm-hmm. So the statewide insurance regulation that's enforced statewide, so do you have to do the check to make sure that these drivers have insurance?
So the company carries that policy. There are other insurance companies that, since the regulations passed, have started to offer some new personal insurance policies, since these partners, for the most part, are driving on the platform on a part-time basis to earn supplemental income. They do need to have their personal insurance car policy that covers whenever they're driving on their own. However, when they turn on that app and they start looking for a trip, or when they have a rider in the vehicle with them, that's when our commercial policy then kicks in and covers both the driver and the rider.
Mm-hmm. So I was curious about that because I didn't know if, with the cities getting involved in doing this kind of partnership, if they end up opening themselves up to any kind of insurance liability.
Because the company has an insurance policy once these trips are taking place.
Okay, great. That was what I was curious about, and that's kind of where I was trying to go there. So, Frank Martz with Altamont Springs, the city's contract with Uber, does it require anything above and beyond what Uber's already doing or what the state requires?
Our agreement with Uber requires what Uber is already requiring, and we were a strong advocate to the state legislature to open the doors to this type of innovation, this type of access to technology. We are learning. And one of the things that you learn when you're first is how to answer some of these questions. Government is so used to dealing with other governments and not as used to dealing with private companies. And if you are going to be successful in a public-private partnership, both parties have to do their jobs. And Uber has been extremely understanding of the importance of our role as a government and our role as a provider, and have been very responsive to us. So it's been, at least for us, very comfortable, and we're very comfortable with the position we're in.
So the city's paying for 20% a rise and 25% a rise to SunRail commuter stations. Where's that money coming out of?
Well, it's coming out of transportation dollars that we would have otherwise spent. One of the things we realized long ago when we started working on FlexBus and even driven home more greatly through our partnership with Uber is that so much of the United States and certainly Florida has been focused on building infrastructure that mirrors what we built 40 years ago. And that has no relationship to the type of people who are going to be in our new economy 40 years from now. So using our tax dollars, using transportation dollars to fund subsidize the Uber trips, we're only subsidizing, by the way, 5%. Or 20% of the first $25, so it's not an open-ended thing. But we're using transportation dollars, and we're just choosing to use them differently. If we can get people, as Javi mentioned, if we can get people used to getting out of their own car, that's a huge step in Florida. And the fact that they can go door-to-door, the fact that they have convenience, their transportation choices are in their hands, not at a transportation station, not at a train station, not on a bus flyer. It's in their hands, and it gives them a great tool. So we're using those tax dollars and those transportation dollars much more effectively for our residents than we ever would have done if we just threw another lane of roadway out there and thought things would be better.
So far we're about a year in. Have you been able to measure if it's successful? Is it encouraging new rides or replacing any existing commutes so far?
Well, as Javi mentioned, we saw a 75% increase in utilization, and that means that some number of people have made a switch instead of using their car and taking up a parking space and perhaps been inconvenienced by walking to a place that they're going. They're door-to-door, and our experience has been both in terms of data and in terms of anecdotal response from our residents. They're thrilled. They're thrilled that we got out of the box and we tried to do something different. And they're very happy with the fact that we used something they were already using. Now they're just using it more.
Have you heard any stories from people, or are you surprised at how many people have come up to mention that they're pleased with it?
Yeah, we have a lot of interactivity. We in Altamont Springs, we have an events program that draws 1 million people a year, which is, for our small city of 44,000 people, that's quite a lot. And what we're hearing from our residents is that they love being in close. Altamont is kind of a blend of big city urban living with, you know, you can go into your neighborhood and literally feel like you're in the country. So we have the best of both worlds. And people are very, very happy that they have another option that is for them. You know, it's kind of funny. Our daytime users think it's to help them get, you know, to and from their jobs, go to lunch. Our residents feel like, wow, our city did something just for me. And we've heard both of those experiences, which I think really punctuates the point that I think Uber and others, other TNCs have brought to the market. They have figured out how to put transportation into the hands of their users, which give their users control, which makes it feel personal. And the fact that our government has been able to provide that to them is very special to them.
Mm-hmm. And then, Javi Corioso, earlier you were talking about carpooling for Uber users. Another thing you're talking about possibly is getting into self-driving cars. Tell me a little bit about that project.
That's correct. So in Florida, there are no plans to bring that technology yet. I will say that Florida does have some of the best regulations on its books for this technology. And I think what you're going to see in the next few years is companies like Uber explore Florida as a good place where they can not just test but try to expand this technology. Uber actually does have self-driving cars on the road right now in two cities, in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, which is where we have our self-driving facility, and Tempe, Arizona. So I think in the coming months, Uber's going to continue to explore the expansion of this program. I think this technology is here to stay. Thankfully, our leaders in the Sunshine State have understood this and have adopted rules and regulations that are innovative and, quite frankly, encouraging for companies that are investing a lot of resources in this technology. And I think that looking, you know, into the future, what you're going to see in terms of urban mobility are, like Frank mentioned, just options. You may have ride sharing as a pooling option. You may have ride sharing as an option to get to your public transit station, or you may have a self-driving vehicle that is shared with other passengers and riders be your form of transportation into the city, into work, into school. So I think it's very exciting. This technology is moving along. You know, it's not just Uber, but many other car manufacturers and technology companies are investing a lot of money into this technology. And I think it's definitely exciting. And you know, the statistics have shown that it could actually be safer than what driving is like today, because by having technology that eliminates human error, you can actually save lives on our roads and highways.
Exactly. Well, and then another thing, that Uber's collecting a lot of data about commuter habits and transit issues. How is that data going to be able to be used by cities, especially cities that you're partnering with?
Yeah, that's a great, great question. We actually have a product that we're rolling out in the next few weeks that we're very, very excited about. It's called Uber Movement. And what Uber Movement is, it's basically the millions of miles that are driven on Uber and the data that we collect. We can tell, you know, what traffic lights are taking the longest. Is there a pothole along a route? Are there roads that our driver partners are taking and our preferred routes compared to some of the other major highways and roads in the respective city? So what we want to do is give traffic planners, urban planners, transportation officials access to this data, so as they undergo their planning process and they examine ways in which they can maximize the resources that the taxpayers are sending into their respective cities, they can make better decisions based on live data that we at Uber are collecting from the you know, from the many trips that we're doing within these cities.
Well, you're getting kind of that locals only approach. I mean, this is the preferred side road to going on the pothole riddled highway or different routes that people have picked up on just because of speed and ease and the lack of traffic lights. And that kind of information might help to inform cities. Is that where you're going with that?
Absolutely.
All right.
Exactly right.
So, Frank Martz with Altamont Springs, I wanted to ask you, where do you see this going in the future?
Well, I don't think there's ever going to be a time when people are going to give up their convenience in a lower-cost alternative. So I think, at least in Altamont Springs and in our five cities, and we've talked to about 67 different cities throughout the country and on several different continents about our experience with Uber. I think that technology is here to stay. I believe that driverless vehicles are going to be something that in our future we'll have here in Florida. So I believe that the trend line, at least for us, would be continue to find convenient options that are low cost, things we can afford. And frankly, public transportation is a hard thing to afford for us. But find things we can afford that appeal to our residents, that give them mobility options and choices that they can make, and continue to be open-minded and see what the market brings and what's out there to use.
All right. Well, we're going to have to leave it there for now, but I want to thank our guest, Frank Martz, with Altamont City Springs Manager. Thanks for sharing what's happening in your city and the surrounding other four cities.
Thank you very much for having us.
I also want to thank Javi Corioso, the Uber public affairs man who took us through the basics and all the way into the future with the self-driving cars.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
Coming up, according to a building department official we'll talk to you next, most of the people working without a general contractor's license are doing so because they have a criminal record or can't get insurance. After this break, we'll talk about making sure you and your home are safe with an easy click of the mouse. I'm Julie Glenn. This is Gulf Coast Live. Stay with us.